the network for the AV industry.
What are you listening to?
This
is AV.
This is AV Nation.
This is AV Nation.
Hi, welcome to this episode of AV Social, episode 13. I'm Dawn Mead. I'm one of your hosts. As usual with me is our co-host, Kelly Perkins. Say hi, Kelly.
Good morning, everyone.
And we are very excited. I know I'm very excited today to have a very special guest. We're joined today by Peter Shankman. If you don't know who Peter Shankman he's a genius. He's written 4 books. The most recent is what we're going to be discussing today, which is Zombie Loyalists, Using Great Service to Create Rabid Fans. So welcome, Peter.
Hey, good to be here. Thanks.
So as I said, I'm very thrilled to have Peter with us today. I'm a longtime fan of his work. For those of you that have ever taken my class on social media at Infocom, Peter is the genius behind Help a Reporter Out, or Harrow. He invented the service that basically has gotten a lot of us a lot of press over the years. And he continues sharing the good word most recently with this book. So, Peter, could you tell us a little bit about zombies? I mean, zombie loyalists. Why zombies?
Well, you know, zombies are really interesting in the respect that they really only have one goal, and that is to breed, right? All they do is they eat and they feed. That's their entire world. And so a zombie loyalist sort of has that same one goal, but for your business. He's had such an amazing experience with you that all he wants to do is have a great time wherever he is and bring other people to use your business. So whether it's a restaurant or a bar or a car dealership or an airline or whatever, he knows that he was treated well and he wants to bring other people to get involved in that.
That's great. I know... A little bit about AV Social, AV Nation, where the audiovisual technology industry, very small, very niche kind of industry, and a lot of the topics covered in your book are things that our industry has traditionally struggled with. Not just providing service, but building our entire businesses around that service and customer support model. In fact, we're undergoing a sea change in the industry right now where the old model of just selling boxes and installing things is going away, and it's become more of a recurring revenue, a subscription client, AV as a service partnership thing. And I know, you know, reading through this book, I just got it, so I haven't gotten the whole thing read so far, but there were several things that stood out to me that our industry just definitely needs to know. I believe chapter 3, you said, let me find my note here, that we need to embrace our customers and our employees, empower them to help and just embrace the change, embrace the fact that our employees are empowered to go out and speak to customers, that our employees are able to make decisions that impact those customers and don't rely on doing things the way we used to. And go ahead.
You've expanded
on it much better than I can.
There's definitely a change going on in the world. You know, people are realizing about what they can talk about and what they can share, and they're finding that if they share things, they're getting tremendous response from both the companies and the customers and their friends as well. The issue is, you know, the internet sort of runs on two things, bragging and drama. You know, bragging is, look at my upgrade, look at how well I was treated. Drama is, look at how horrible I was treated, look at the delays I'm having, look at how undercooked my steak was. And so what we're finding is that the more the customer service really starts on the ground floor, that it comes from the CEO and works all the way downward, that people say, hey, you know what, I had a great experience. My employees are empowered to give my customers great experiences. And, you know, they'll never get in trouble for going above and beyond, they'll only get in trouble for not doing enough. That really sort of grows. And so the change that we're all seeing is the companies really want to grow their brands, not just using social media, not jumping on a bandwagon and saying, look at how freaking awesome I am, but rather doing amazing things so that the employees are doing such amazing things that the customers see that and the customers say, look at how amazing this brand and this product is. It's much more believable when it's a friend of yours saying how great a company is versus the company itself.
Absolutely. Kelly, did you want to jump in at any point?
Yeah, no, I think it's really interesting. I used to work for a manufacturer, so we sold products. My entire career, I've sold products, whether it's software, hardware, and now I work for an AV, and we're basically a services company. And it's just interesting how different marketing, you know, a service is versus marketing a product. Because sometimes the products can speak for themselves, et cetera. But when you're marketing a service, you're really marketing your people.
That's the thing. You really are. All you have is your people. At the end of the day, you know, I'm not, whether I get a steak at this place or at that place, the price is pretty much the same. It's all about the experience I have.
It is, and it's amazing, and it's fun, but at the same time, it's slightly terrifying. And, you know, I've only been in the services industry not even a year yet, and I've done a lot of trial and error and stuff. And I mean, is there anything that you would recommend as far as, you know, working within an organization to, you know, promote the empowerment of employees, promote, you know, customer service that way?
I think at the end of the day, what you really want to do is you want to focus on employee value. You want to show the employees that, you know what, they do matter. They're pretty awesome. And that you know, treating them well really shows the, it gives them a sense of unity, and it gives them a sense of empowerment, and it gives them a sense that they really have, you know, they matter. Their world matters, and what they do matters, and that's pretty awesome, because it makes it beneficial for them to want to help the customers on their own.
Yeah, my old boss always said that, you know, he's like empower your employees to do, you know, do what they love to do. And once they do, you know, once they're passionate about what they love to do, everything else becomes easy, because they're excited to go to work. They're excited to work with each other, you know, and there's that air of, you know, and people can see that. Your customers can see if people are happy at their work, and
no question about it. You know, and again, look, this isn't rocket science. You're not sitting there trying to change the world. What you're doing is you're simply saying, you know, we want to create a better experience. And we want to help the employees. As an employee, we want to help you do that. We want to give you the permission to do that. We want to empower you to do that. But it has to start with the right hires. You know, it has to start with companies hiring the right people. Ritz-Carlton doesn't hire people that can make beds. Ritz-Carlton hires people that love people. And that's a big difference.
Makes total sense.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think you've mentioned, I heard you on another podcast, Peter, you said you want to hire the person for their personality, because you can train a skill set. You don't always train the personality. To what Kelly said, you had some statistics in your book just at the beginning there that really struck me. A Fortune 50 company said over 60% of their employees said they'd work harder, they'd take better care of customers, and they'd be more present in their workplace if they felt like their employer cared about them. And you said, you know, treat your employees like superheroes, and they will help you build this zombie army.
That's the goal. It really is. And it's so sad. You know, it's so sad because companies just so don't do it. They don't realize that it's the littlest, tiniest things, all they need to do to fix the world. But, you know, for whatever reason, that's just not their goal. But it's starting. We're starting to see the change.
Right. Well, so to that point, you know, how do we create zombie loyalists, or at its heart, what makes a zombie loyalist a zombie loyalist? You know,
a zombie loyalist has simply been treated better than they expected. We expect to be treated like crap. You know, we expect our coffee to be cold, our food not to be right, or, you know, whatever it is. We expect all that, and so as long as we treat a little bit better, you know, the customers we have, they will bring us the customers we want. We spend way too much time focusing on getting new customers, but we don't necessarily spend enough time focusing on the customers we have. And, you know, at the end of the day, the customers you have will bring you the customers you want pretty much every single time.
Right. That's very true. And you know, when I started with the company I'm with currently, NetAV, we had a big name recognition problem, because nobody had ever heard of us. But one thing that we had was a core of very dedicated. We had zombie loyalists. We had some very dedicated customers. We work in the government space. And with some of these agencies, we had our zombies, and they just kept bringing us business. And that's how the company stayed intact, and now we're starting to get name recognition. But you're absolutely right. So just treat people well, treat them better. I mean, it just sounds too easy. It sounds too easy, man.
Well, you know, and that's the problem, is that, like I said, we expect such a small we don't expect anything good to happen. And so it doesn't know how much to have. It's so unbelievably easy to create zombie loyalists just because we expect crap. And just a little bit better than anything is enough to do that. And, you know, I'm not telling you you have to spend millions of dollars or change the world, but it's a little tiny stuff.
Get a step up.
That's really all it is. I tell my clients, I don't need you to be awesome. I just need you to be one level above crap.
Right. So, and Don, you had mentioned this before too, like it's a little bit of a culture shift. I feel like, you know, in the past, and even still to this day, there are so many companies that focus on, you know, just specifically revenue and this and that and processes and whatnot. I mean, how would you recommend a company, you know, take that culture shift? I mean, does it go from the top down? You know, can you give us some advice on how to make that shift?
Yeah, it has to start from the CEO. The CEO has got to start, and it has to come down from that. If it doesn't come down from that, you're going to have a world where the employee says, well, why should I bother if the CEO doesn't even care? You know, and that's a problem. And the CEO has to show that they do.
Can you give us some examples of just, you know, tiny little steps and ways of doing that? I mean, is it something where the CEO gets in front of everyone? Is it something where the CEO just kind of gives, you know, a little incentive? I mean, can you give us some examples of that?
For instance, there are countless times where people have problems with a company and they write to the CEO. The CEO is simply responding and showing to people that it works. You know, saying, hey, you know what? This is the buck stops with me. We screwed up. I'm going to make it better. The simple act of doing that shows that people care. Creating loyalists who want to go out and tell the world, it's because they've usually had a great experience. There's no greater lover than a former hater. And, you know, there's a great, in the book I mentioned a woman who in the 1970s wanted to open a charge account with Tiffany's, and she was denied. And so she sent a letter to the CEO explaining why she should qualify for one. She's a young woman. She's just starting out of school, has a job. The job pays well. She can afford it. Da, da, da. And the CEO replied with, you know, we'll open. Thank you for your letter. And to this day, she's kept that letter framed, and she spends all her money at Tiffany's. You know, it's the kind of thing where there's no way she would ever shop somewhere else because they care. And that's the CEO showing that it matters.
That's so funny that you mentioned that, though, because, you know, long story short, I had a really, really terrible experience at the Wynn Casino in Las Vegas. It was awful. And I took the time to handwrite a letter, you know, to the CEO, and I never heard of it. And to this day, it's like, I will not recommend anybody go there. I will vocally say how much I dislike it and whatnot. So it's just, you're totally right. That's a prime example.
Yep. No question about it. It's so easy to do. It's just so easy to do. That's the part that kills me.
And had somebody taken 5 minutes to actually, you know, write a response, it didn't even have to come from him, just anyone.
Correct.
You know what I mean? My mind would have totally been changed. But to this day, I will never stay there.
No question about it.
And that was that's what I love about your books in general, Peter. I own at least 3 of the 4 books you've written. But every one of them is so full of examples of companies that go above and beyond, as well as sometimes companies that just don't hack it. Mm-hmm. And one of my favorites so far from Zombie Loyalist is your Labradoodle story with your banking.
I love that story.
Yeah. Please share it with us, because it's a perfect example of not just a CEO, but like a branch manager being able to...
Very simply, I was with Chase Bank, and I asked... And I went in to Chase Bank with my dog, and it was he's a Labrador Poodle mix at the time. He's since passed away, but he's a Labrador Poodle mix, and he was just a great dog. But he was a Muppet, you know. He would never hurt anyone. He was pretty awesome. And Chase made me leave. Oh, you know, you can't have banks in here. Not okay, and not allowed. I'm like, he's a Muppet. He's not going to hurt anyone. I'm just depositing this check. So they kicked me out, and I was like, okay, well, the hell with that. And I went across the street to TD Bank. And TD Bank was like, this is the greatest dog we've ever seen. This is awesome. We love this dog. Oh my God, you know. And I've since had like 10 accounts with that bank, and you know, Chase hasn't gotten a penny from me. And all they needed to do was just be a little nicer, and they haven't gotten anything from me. So they learned. They probably didn't learn a lesson, but I like to think they did.
I think they're going to learn the lesson since now they're called out in a book, you know, that's being read by millions of people that
I hope so.
For being stupid. but it's that point that some of these little things that we do or don't do make a huge difference. You cited us an Accenture study from 2012 that 66% of customers will spend more money with a company that provides great service, but more importantly, 85% left a company that they would continue to do business with if they had just acted differently in a problem situation, which, I mean, that's what happened with Kelly and Wynn. They didn't act right with the problem. Had they just, you know, taken a step up, even if it's just the concierge saying, well, here's a dinner on us.
Amazing.
Sorry for your problem. Yeah.
Just amazing. So, you know, and it's sad. It really is.
So let's see. Kelly? Any other questions here for Peter?
I think at the end of the day, companies just need to realize that they have the ability to do incredible things. They just have to sort of take the gamble to do it. You know, so many companies don't do something new because it's not the way they've always done things. And what they're finding out is that that's actually a problem. Take that risk, and especially in today's world where everyone's talking online, you'd be amazed how well it'll work for you.
That's like my least favorite probably phrase I've ever heard. I hate it, and I hear it all the time. Why do you do something this way? Why do you do something that way? Well, it's because we've always done it that way.
Yeah, it's a problem.
It drives me nuts.
Definitely a problem. I tend to answer questions a lot, and this has always happened. Like, people get such direct answers from me. They're like, okay, well, we have 20 minutes left, and we have nothing else to ask you. I'm like, sorry I speak so fast.
I don't mind. I speak fast myself, and I'm just also kind of a little bit, I sound like a total fangirl, but I really am. I've been a follower of your career and your books and your podcasts and everything, blogs, for like 10 years now, and I, you know, ask the other folks at AV Nation, when I first heard that you were willing to be on the show, I literally fangirled in typing in all caps for like, you know, a couple of days. So, I, you know, part of mine is like, talk more about the book, but part of mine is, oh my God, I'm talking to Peter Shankman right now, so this is very cool.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Kelly, do you have any further questions?
It's fun. It's like I'm one direction. This is awesome.
I honestly don't at this point. I haven't read the book yet. I just ordered it online. So I'm waiting from Amazon to get my copy. So
oh,
I'm really excited.
We'll do this again.
Yeah, I'd love it.
Yeah, no worries.
If you ever want to come on and talk about anything, we're always happy to have you here. For everybody watching out in AV Nation, the whole reason that I am AV Dawn and host this show and teach at Infocom is this man sitting here. I mean, I found your helper reporter out back in, gosh, 2008 or something, and it was right when I first got on Twitter and first started some of this stuff, and it made me seem like a genius. I tell people that in my class, help a reporter out and read Peter Shankman, and you will seem like a marketing genius, even if you're making it up as you go along. So thank you for my career.
Ah, glad I could do it. So you know, I'm apparently you don't have my correct address because my you know, my reciprocity checks of 10% of your gross salary hasn't come in yet, but it's okay.
We'll talk to Megan.
I'll think that off list. Yeah, you know, it's probably Megan's fault, right?
Well, do you wanna maybe leave us with some words of wisdom?
Sure. Best advice I can give you is do one thing every day that scares you. That's usually the best way to start anything. And even if that in a simple company is going up to your boss and saying, hey, you know what, let's be nicer. That can do a lot. I remember working AV in high school. I went to high school of performing arts and I ran stage crew. And one day I discovered that there was a feature in the soundboard called a God mic, which was this little tiny patch. You press the button and you could talk into it and it would broadcast throughout the entire concert hall. And so I remember I was hiding in the sound booth, and the teacher who ran stage crew came in, and he didn't know anyone was there. And so out of the blue, what are you doing there? And he must have jumped 15 feet and threatened to kick me off stage crew. But in the end, he said, I saved you because you're pretty much a nice kid. You know, he goes, you scared the hell out of me this time, but you're usually a nice kid, so I'll let it slide. And so nice apparently does work, and it was funny as hell to watch him jump. So
fun with AV, absolutely. Yeah. Well, folks, that's Peter Shankman. He's the author of Zombie Loyalists, as well as Nice Companies Finish First, Customer Service Rules for Social Media World. Can we do that? And he has a blog at shankman.com. He has masterminds. He comes, travels all around the world having these meetings, and he's like a genius. So if you want to learn about marketing, follow this guy. Check out his new book, Zombie Loyalist. And Peter, seriously, thank you so much for being here today. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure, guys.